Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 7, entitled What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, text 26. Ebhis. Ebis trivarnai paryastair. Ebis trivarnai paryastair. Budi bedai kriyod bavaihi. Budi beda kriyod bavaihi. Svarupam atmano budyed. Svarupam atmano budyet. Gandharvayum ivanvayat. Gandharvayum ivanvayat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so, under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. Purport. As already explained, there are three states to our existence, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. In all three states, we have different experiences. Thus, the soul is the observer of these three states. Actually, the activities of the body are not the activities of the soul. The soul is different from the body. Just as aromas are distinct from the material vehicle in which they are carried, the soul is unattached to material activities. This analysis can be considered by a person who is fully under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is confirmed by the Vedic injunction, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvam Evam Vigyatam Pavati. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can automatically understand everything else. Because of not taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, even great scholars, scientists, philosophers, and religionists are always bewildered. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Yenyera vidaksha vimuktamaninas tvayastabhava davishuda buddhayaham. Even though one may artificially think himself liberated from material contamination, if he has not taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, his intelligence is polluted. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.42, Indriyani paranya hur indriyebhya param manaha manasastu para budhiryo budhe paratastu saham. Above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Ultimately, when one's intelligence becomes clear through devotional service, one is situated in Buddhi Yoga. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. When devotional service develops and one's intelligence becomes clear, one can use his intelligence to return home, back to Godhead. Ebis trivarnai paryastair budhi beda kriyod bhavai svarupam atmano budhyed gandharvayum ivanvayat. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. So, in the verse itself, Prahlad Maharaj mentions how actually the symptoms which point out at the presence of the soul in a particular body can be only directed or can be only experienced and understood by someone else who already has such kind of experience, and basically not by one who is covered, as we are, by the three modes of material nature, who are basically conditioned and who don't have such kind of understanding initially in this worldly material existence. So the presence of the soul can basically be experienced only by the person, or as it is mentioned here, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who already has basically knowledge, of course, complete, absolute understanding of the nature of the matter and the spirit, or by the spiritual master, who also has such kind of realization and understanding of the presence and the nature of the spirit soul, or the spiritual nature. So otherwise it is not possible to understand what is spirit soul, unless somebody points out to it. Many times people basically have the understanding that we can experience everything through our own senses, that just by different kind of analysis, of course, the Sankhya philosophy was mentioned earlier, but philosophers and scientists and scholars, they analyze particular, not just elements, but whole different situations and whole different phenomena in this material world, and trying to come to particular conclusions, trying to reduce it to particular theory of everything, TOV, which is kind of very well known in the scientific circles, that would give a particular formula explaining just kind of one aphorismical, I can call it like this, formula which would explain actually all the natural phenomena and whatever is happening in this material universe. But of course, when we deal with such kind of a principle which is unattainable to us, which is not understandable to us, and which is not directly perceivable, which is above this empiric method, then of course we have to have somebody to guide us, somebody who is already experienced in such particular topics or such particular matter. Otherwise we won't understand and we won't be able to perceive it. So spiritual master or Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have this understanding of the spirit, and only if they impart this particular knowledge unto us, only if they point these particular things to us, we will be able to recognize them, we will be able to see them. Otherwise it is very difficult, actually almost impossible. Don't mean we have any kind of material knowledge, or don't mean we try to acquire any by any empiric method, any kind of understanding, we won't be able to see. The example may be given of a person, and of course we may also see, and that's the basic point from which all the people nowadays having material conception or material frame of mind, they approach it, you know, just seeing is believing. That's the basic concept, which also very much refers not just to this concept, this particular concept of the soul, but it also refers to the Supreme, basically, Personality of Godhead, when they refer seeing is believing. But actually, spiritual method is completely different. It is not by seeing that we understand some particular things in spiritual life. It is by hearing. So as in mathematics, we have particular method. As is in chemistry, we have a particular method of proving, of getting towards, you know, getting some result. There is a particular methodology. So methodology in spiritual life, and you can't mix those particular methodologies. So you have a particular formula in chemistry, you can't use it in mathematics. It's a completely different system. It's a completely different way of proving particular thing or acquiring particular knowledge. You can't mix those things. And especially similarly, you can't apply also those material formulas, you can't apply it in the spiritual science. So spiritual science, in the spiritual science, knowledge is acquired by hearing it from the authority, Shabda Praman, by hearing from the higher source. So only by that kind of information, actually, we can understand what is spirit soul, and actually how to understand that there is a spirit soul. Otherwise, we won't be able to perceive it in any way, as much as we are materially qualified or scholarly prominent. We won't be able to perceive it. So the whole point of that seeing, like we can see any particular object, say our, sound system, for example. We may see it, we may understand, oh yes, it works, but how it works, actually, we won't have a complete understanding of it. We won't have a particular understanding. Maybe our Hare Krishna Prabhu, he understands definitely how all these intricacies of this particular system, how it works, how the sounds get in, how it's transformed, how it's, you know, how we are getting particular message through the loudspeakers and all these different details. So when, you know, so we just kind of by seeing the sound system, we want to understand definitely what is going on in the sound system itself. We may understand, yes, we are getting the sound out. We are getting amplified sound. And this is all what we can perceive. This is all what we can understand. But when he, for example, or somebody else who is an expert in the sound system, when somebody explains to us this is how it works and this kind of manifestations that are taking place in that particular box, and then we can say, oh, I see. Then we actually, that seeing means that seeing is the understanding of a particular, you know, setup of that particular object. So that seeing is understanding. So understanding of the spirit soul, we can only inquire when we get such kind of a higher information from somebody who have complete knowledge of a particular object. And then we can say, oh yes, I see. So that I see means I understand. I understand by hearing, not just by, you know, vision, by eye darshan, for example. So that's not the kind of understanding that we are looking for. That is not methodology in the spiritual life. So methodology is to receive the qualified information from the higher source, then we can really grasp the understanding. And how it is explained, especially in Bhagavad Gita, to understand the presence of soul, it is by the symptoms. It is not by that particular direct vision. It is by the symptoms. And the consciousness is the symptom by which we can understand. Consciousness is that force that pervades the whole body by which we can understand that there is a presence of soul. And materialists can't explain, can't basically even nowadays explain the life force. What is that life force in the body? What is that that moves the body in spite of their chemical theory of evolution? Anyway, I won't get into that. But basically the whole point is they still can't explain the whole essence of the life's existence. So even if we don't have classical example, we all know it, all the chemicals in the body and body still present here. But if there is no that presence of the living entity, if consciousness is not there, if awareness is not there, then of course this body won't have any meaning. It won't move, it won't protest if you kick it, it won't, there won't be any reaction, there won't be any particular action also. Neither action nor reaction, if soul is not present there. So we can understand this soul only by the symptoms. And the soul, as it is mentioned here in the purport itself, it's completely different from that particular body, which is composed of the chemicals. It has a completely different nature. But due to the influence of the material energy and, of course, particular desires, as Krishna explains, Ichadvesha, Samutena, Dvandva, Mohena, Bharatva, as we basically develop hatred and desire of enjoying in this material world, we come to this material world, and our consciousness or intelligence in this case, as you are explaining here, different kinds of intelligence, becomes polluted, and we completely basically lost the sense of our real identity, and we get entrapped in the identity that we are this body. So the example is given like of a pure drop which is in the rainy cloud of water, which is completely pure initially, but when it comes down to this material world and it touches the ground, it becomes muddy, becomes dirty. And of course the process again is to filter it, to make it pure so that it can basically by evaporation it goes back to the clouds, goes back to the sky. So that process of purification and understanding, it is this particular process that we are practicing, the process of Bhakti Yoga. And the spirit soul acquires, of course, this different contamination due to association with the different modes of material nature, which are the modes sattva, rajas, and tamas, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. So if when we come to this material world, if there is a particular, which can be compared to a particular pool, like in the surface there is some sunlight, it is still clear. And then if you go deeper into the particular pool, then it becomes kind of dim. And the further you go, it becomes darker and darker until ultimately you don't see anything, it becomes so dark. So these are like even lower stages of the consciousness and understanding. And what to speak, if you're going further deep down, it's like kind of animal life. So basically the body of a particular person in such kind of condition at the lowest stage is not visible at all. And then as person rises his consciousness and his understanding, when it comes to that dim level, that there may be some kind of visualization, I mean, some kind of a vision of that particular body, kind of a, something can be noticed or whatever. It can be seen to some extent. And then further it goes, closer to the surface, then as it elevates its consciousness and understanding, then the body can be completely visible of a diver who has entered into that particular pool. And of course, if he enters out of the water, but he's still in that particular environment, in this element, they can be compared to the condition of a Shuddha Sattva, wherein person is enlightened, but still conditioned, somehow or other, not conditioned, but actually present in the material world, then he can be completely pulled out by some friends, say, who are on the boat, or in our case, by the spiritual master or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So soul undergoes that kind of different conditions in the material world due to the association of the different modes of material nature. But it doesn't mix with the body. It is influenced. Like, for example, if you have a, if you put in the water oil or the mercury, it doesn't mix with the water. But it can be carried away by the waves. So the spirit soul, it doesn't mix with a particular water, or oil doesn't mix. It can be carried, and the, but in a case, in a, this particular, by practicing this particular process, it can be extracted by the expert chemist. So similarly, we can again extract this this particular contamination which has enveloped and trapped the living entity or the spirit soul in this material body. So here, different types of intelligence are mentioned, which are influencing the material soul. And it is an interesting thing. Earlier, it has been described by Prahlad Maharaj. There is that analytical study that also helps us understand the presence of the spirit soul in the body. We are analytically studying. If we divide by the Sankhya philosophy all the different elements, and finally, of course, if we have that, it's that particular type of intelligence to understand it, that unless, of course, there are no elements, you know, soul, the life is not present in all the elements, then where is the life? That what is that moving force? Then by that spiritual information, we can understand that that moving force actually is the spirit soul. Otherwise, how else do you explain the life? How can you explain the life? What is the soul? What is that force that moves the body? It's not possible otherwise. Even scientists nowadays, they're trying so hard to explain, but they can't explain. They can't explain what is that life force, where the life comes, when, where the life comes from. Still, you know, they're trying by different neurons, combinations of them in the brain and in the body, all these different things, you know, the life force is generated. But that's not a fact. And another kind of scientific evidence that, of course, devotees are using, who are a little more scientifically inclined, they understand, the examples are given of the different kinds of out-of-body experiences, NOD experiences. And the most important factor, and what is the essential quality of intelligence, that it's kind of a bank of intuition and rational knowledge, is that intuition actually, but given, of course, by the supersoul, is that intuition that or inspiration by the supersoul to do particular activities which are otherwise impossible, of which person in particular doesn't have any earlier experience. Like, for example, the great musicians, like Mozart, he would hear particular melody and intuitively he would be inspired to notice it and note it down. And this is the basic way how actually he composed. He said, I don't have anything to do it. I just hear it. It's just the intuition. It's just the something that has been inspired within my heart. So when you analyze, when you dissolve all these different kinds of element, so what is that that gives you inspiration? How can you explain these kind of things unless there is a spirit soul and unless there is another super soul which actually inspires all these things happening in our heart? So definitely it's not impossible. So soul is very incredible, it's very amazing element. So when we say amazing, we can come back to the Bhagavad Gita and mention the amazing verse which describes the amazing soul. Some see soul as amazing, some speak about soul or describe it as amazing, some hear it as amazing, but still even some of those who hear it can't understand it at all. So it's amazing, amazing element, this spirit soul. Interestingly, according to Vaishnavacharyas, in a Sanskrit grammar, if you analyze this amazing Ashcharyavat, if you can actually apply it to subject, verb and the object. So it's interesting that actually it's not only soul that is amazing, but also if you apply that ashcharyavat or amazing principle, if you apply it to the subject or a man, the man becomes amazing. The man who sees the soul, that vision, that's amazing thing. Because who sees the soul? As we were explaining, scientists, great scholars, it's hard. They can't understand it even after analytically studying all the principles and everything of material principles. So hardly anybody has that vision to see the soul. So that vision, that person is amazing who has that kind of vision. And then the person who sees the soul, then seeing, that seeing is also amazing because soul is spiritual. How can you see it? Then we come back to these all other principles which we were explaining about, that you have to understand it by symptoms. So that seeing of the spiritual soul, invisible soul, that's also amazing. And the soul itself as an object, that verb, of course, that was the verb, seeing. And the object, the soul, it's also amazing by itself. How can such a spark of life, minute, you know, 10,000 part of this hair, which resides in the body of an elephant or a big banyan tree, you know, moves the whales, which are so huge. Just recently, there was some information that there is some, I don't know, some whale which was enormous size. Anyway, I thought it's kind of a Timingilla. That's some news in the newspapers, whatever. But it's huge, such a huge body. I don't know, it says like it's bigger than an airplane. I don't know how many. They gave some, they estimated his size. So it's huge. So it's amazing how this small, minute soul can move such a huge bodies. So that particular potency, that's also amazing of the soul. And then, of course, speaking about the soul. Hardly anybody speaks about the spiritual matters, but to speak about soul. Of course, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati sida yatatamapi sidanam kaschimam veti tatvataha. Very hardly anybody is interested at all. So that speaking about the soul, or the describing the soul, that's also very rare in this material world. So anybody who does that, that person is amazing, or that speaking is amazing. Or again, in the same point, that particular soul is amazing. And then in the third line, we have the person who hears about a soul. That's also amazing, and it's also rare. Hardly anybody hears or wants to hear about a soul. And even if he hears, then that particular person actually, and understand it, that is also very rare. But of course, the majority of the people, as the verse itself, it said, even after they hear about a soul, they don't understand it at all. And they don't want to understand it at all in the many cases. Because there are different types of intelligence which we will discuss now. How they don't understand the spirit soul. They might have intelligence, some people may have intelligence, but they don't understand it completely. But the whole point of that principle of analyzing and coming to the point that there is existence of there is some spiritual nature, that there is existence of the spirit soul, it is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead itself, of course, the Sankhya philosophy, and the principle of the negation is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, neti-neti principle, to understand. Because in the case of spirit soul, you can't say directly, kind of also in a sense, it is that. You can say, yes, but also the principle of describing, negating it in a way, can also describe it from the different angle, from the different point of view. Like we understand the spirit, Supreme Spirit, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, how is it described by this principle of neti-neti? It's not this, it's not that. Of course, it's not that Vedas are not describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're also directly describing. But most of the people in this world who are Nirvishesha and Shunyavadi, basically impersonalists, they like that particular description and they always point out and they emphasize this particular description when Lord is described as neti-neti, basically not this, or doesn't having any qualities. But actually, if we analyze or their vakyas, they have particular words they've picked up from the Vedanta Sutra, and they very much get very much stuck to it. They say that Lord is impersonal because it is like described in this particular way as impersonal. Like for example, satyam jnanam anantam. So yes, these are satyam means truth, jnana knowledge, anantam basically it's unlimited, doesn't have any end. But there is also the opposite qualities, which are in the same way describing that particular absolute truth. It's not just that it's, yes, of course, these are impersonal, but they're also the opposite quality of this, that means it's a quality. Like satyam, satyam truth, and asatyam, there may be untruth. So these are all different qualities. Or anantam or saanantam. Saanantam means that something that has an end. So these are all qualities. So how can you negate that God doesn't have a qualities? But basically the principle of impersonalists is that they quote very often the verse from Upanishads that says that you can't describe Lord by the words only. You can't sufficient. Words cannot sufficiently describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is their kind of a basic point from which they say that you can't describe him and therefore he is impersonal. And Vaishnavacharyas actually give the comment on this particular understanding that yes, you can't describe him if that particular description is given by the materialist, because he definitely doesn't know anything about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he himself being covered can't uncover the real identity or the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And second understanding is the real meaning why we can't describe or by the words the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is unlimited and he is so vast and his pastimes are so vast. As Ananta Shesha, from the beginning of the creation, he's constantly reciting the glories of Supreme Personality of Godhead, but there is no end to it, and he can't keep up with the pastimes and the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how the words basically can't describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are describing him to some particular level that definitely can't be denied in the Vedic scripture. And that's that basic point where the impersonalists get stuck. They say, no, there is no description. They're all impersonal qualities. Actually, they don't say that they're even qualities. They say they're all just descriptions which negate basically existence, personal existence of the Lord. But if you, again, there is one interesting word which they very commonly use. It is adrisatyam. That means basically invisible. So by that particular word, they conclude God is invisible, God doesn't exist. But God exists because it is a special potency. Of course, they say it exists, but it's not visible. Because invisibility basically refers that there is a person existing, but just it has a particular power, it has a particular potency, but which you can't see him. Like if you say, the son of a barren woman is invisible. So that's correct, because it doesn't exist. So there's not any problem in it. Or the enemy of the Yudhishthir Maharaj is not born. So that's also correct, because it doesn't exist. But if you say, for example, a person, Chaitanya Anand Prabhu, who is there, and he has some 70 kgs and he's alive and he's sitting there, but if he wouldn't be visible, that would be something. That's a special potency, that's a special quality. So the Supreme Lord, he exists, he's present, but he has a special potency, he has a special quality by which you can't perceive him, you can't see him. So it's a quality, you can't say it's impersonal. So, but anyway, this, and of course, Supreme Personality of Godhead, he likes to speak indirectly, and the sages, it is mentioned in Bhagavatam also, they also speak indirectly. They don't directly disclose the truth. Why? Because there, it is explained, because some persons have, some particular level of inclination towards spiritual life. Those who desire just kama kanda, basically some material enjoyment, four basic principles of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Supreme Lord doesn't directly disclose all intimate and basic things about himself. Only those who are really spiritually inclined and who are spiritually desiring to achieve the absolute truth, which Krishna says there are four kinds of person who surrenders of me. The last one, basically, which is searching for the knowledge of the absolute, and who wants to know, last two, who wants to know the knowledge of the absolute truth, who are searching for bhakti yoga, then Lord speaks directly to them. So therefore, in the scriptures, you will have indirect explanation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and direct. So it depends on our attitude the Lord reveals to us. So that principle of neti neti, of course, also, it's a kind of revelation to the devotees. it's not just for the impersonalists, but it's also for the devotees, because they can understand the other qualities through these 1980 principles as well, and especially understanding the spirit soul. Another point is that this intelligence to understand, which is required, and it's described here of the three, which is of the three nature, that intelligence can be various. There are various kinds of intelligence. There are three, basically. Prabhupada said there are three kinds of everything, even prasadam. That's what Prabhupada says. And so that means what kind of intelligence? There are three kinds of everything. Means basically basic three divisions through the which are acquired through the association of the three modes of material nature. So there are different kinds of intelligences as well. And not like nowadays, basically, people, when they discuss what intelligence means, they basically get stuck to one particular level of the intelligence, which is kind of nowadays measuring your IQ, and which is basically based on a mathematical and logical intelligence. But as we will hear, there are different kinds of intelligence as well. So it's not just one type of intelligence that measures your, then you become kind of member of Mensa and very, kind of popular or prominent. But it is only one kind of intelligence. And that kind of intelligence that it is mentioned here in the purport itself, where is that? Srila Prabhupada says that scientists, they can't understand Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or great philosophers, if they don't take shelter of him. They can't understand. So they have particular type of intelligence, but why they can't understand Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because they didn't take shelter of it. They don't have that other type of intelligence which is essential to understand its spiritual principles. Intelligence, in essence, is defined as power of discrimination, knowledge, and understanding what is spirit, what is matter. And of course, who is the supreme controller of both? Srila Prabhupada says that this is actually the definition of the real knowledge. But that discrimination should be there. And brahmanas, who are supposed to be independently thoughtful, not supposed, but they are, they should be independently thoughtful, and they should use their intelligence in particular situations to discriminate what is good, what is positive for the spiritual advancement. Of course, as we know from NOI, the basic principles of surrender, actually, to accepting favorable things and rejecting the unfavorable things in devotional life. So that discrimination, that type of intelligence is the most important to understand and especially advance in the spiritual life. One example was there when Srila Prabhupada came to New York once. He found out that, it's kind of strange example, strange things were happening also in the Srila Prabhupada's time. I don't know if you heard about that one, but he found out that the wife of a GBC man at that particular place was cooking chicken in a deity room. So we're all devotees here. So the whole point was, when Srila Prabhupada came there, he was very angry, and he said, okay, I understand. Why? He asked, first of all, why nobody protested? And they say, oh, he's a GBC. So he said, fine, that kind of attitude, it's good for the neophyte devotees, but those who are senior, they should have been reacted in some way. So that kind of a discrimination, it's very much needed. So it's not that just that, of course, there are different principles and the spiritual life, but that power of discrimination should also be present there. The use of intelligence is especially meant, and it's associated with the qualities of a brahminical persons. So intelligence basically has three functions. It accepts, rejects, and it's indifferent to particular things. And if you study, if anybody has done a teacher training course, there you'll come across the information that intelligence nowadays by the scholars have been, as we were talking about different kinds of them, that it has been divided in a seven basic divisions. The first one is spatial visual. Where in person, basically it's kind of more artistic one. Where in person, thinks in a picture. He can very easily relate to pictures. He can memorize. He can very well understand the diagrams, the maps. He's very good at that. So that's kind of spatial visual intelligence. Then there is linguistic intelligence, where in person is very good in writing expression, word expression, very good in languages. So and also likes the word puzzles, word games. So that's kind of a linguistic intelligence. And there is intrapersonal intelligence, wherein person can very easily relate to others. It's mixing very well with others. It's very good communicating with others. So that's intrapersonal relationship. And then there is a musical, intelligence. Then there is a musical intelligence, that person who can very easily relate to rhythms and melodies. And then there is bodily kinetic intelligence, which is also the kind of intelligence where in person has complete absolute control over how he knows how his body actually functions and relates to. He likes to touch, he likes to play with different kinds of objects. He's very much expert in this. He uses intelligence for this particular type of thing. And then there is the last one, this logical or mathematical intelligence, which is kind of the most prominent nowadays, wherein person thinks in terms of mathematics, logics, and different kinds of systems. He likes abstract thinking. He likes to solve the problems. He's a very good organizer. So that's kind of intelligence. So there are different kinds of intelligence, and according to the different kinds of modes, actually, the real, the intrapersonal or introvertive intelligence, actually, that's the last one. This is the best type of intelligence, and it's actually related to the spiritual life. If person has most of the percentage of that kind of intelligence, he can very easily advance in the spiritual life. Why? Because that person is kind of introvert, mostly, and he likes thinking, basically. Nobody has to inspire him. He's self-motivated. He's meditative. He's reflective. And he can very easily understand in such a way the whole of the spiritual matters. So that kind of intelligence, actually, if the person has, then this is the most wanted intelligence, actually, type of intelligence which person to advance in spiritual life. Not any other kind of intelligence. Of course, all of them can be helpful if engaged in the Krishna service. But actually, this type of intelligence, intrapersonal kind of intelligence, very persons like yogis, for example, where they meditate within themselves, it's the most prominent and most wanted intelligence, type of intelligence for the spiritual advancement. And of course, as these different types of intelligence which are present there, acting through the different modes, they're reflected in different living entities in the society, like brahmanas, for example, in the mode of goodness. Their position is or use of that intelligence is prominent or known, that they're using it basically for understanding the scriptures, performing different kinds of rituals. Of course, this may be misleading in a way, as Krishna says, Traigunya Vishaya Veda. So, of course, the whole principle in spiritual life, it's proper use and be careful of not misusing any particular gifts as such. And then Kshatriyas, who would use their intelligence, basically, as we know, the very intelligent game, the most intelligent game is chess. Where does it come from? Comes from the Kshatriya background, where kings were practicing, actually developing their intelligence, trying to different maneuvering and, different tactics, different military skills. And we know from Mahabharata, there were different kinds of military arrangements, different kinds of yuhas. So they were using their intelligence in that particular purpose. And then we have a Vaishyas, who use their intelligence, that's a little more like kind of in the mode of passion and ignorance, who use their intelligence basically for advertisement, for attracting persons to get a particular product, to buy the particular products which actually you don't need, or doing different kinds of businesses. So they know, they're expert how to use intelligence to attract other persons. And that particular principle of attraction is also very important, because some kind of opulence is something that is very attractive. Like we know Krishna, Krish, it also means attraction, or like attractor, something that pulls your mind, something that pulls your intelligence automatically, even if you don't want it. Say some beautiful lady or some handsome man comes in, for example, and even if we don't kind of want it, our mind will be attracted. Why? Because there is a power, there is opulence, there is that particular potency. That's what means attraction. Attraction, it's almost the same word. But attraction also means something that pulls, something that is attractive. And that's very beautiful in the case of Lord Krishna, because he's full of all the opulences, and therefore he's the most attractive or pulling or attractive. So they know that particular science. And of course, Shudras, they use their intelligence to develop different kind of technological devices. So that's also kind of an intelligent. Anyway, I won't go deeper into that. But all these things can be misused. And unfortunately, then person gets, you know, covered by, intelligence gets covered by the principle of enjoyment, and especially the lust, and it gets stuck in this material world. This is a very interesting illustrative story, just quickly to conclude, of a Brahmana who was described in Mahabharata, of a Brahmana who was hungry, and who was actually Vanaprastha order, and he was wandering everywhere, and he wanted to enter a particular forest to acquire some roots and fruits to satisfy his hunger. But he also found out when he entered that particular forest that there are also animals who are hungry, and they started chasing him. So, and they were just about to grab him. He was somehow, by the millimeters, he was escaping to them. And then suddenly, when they were just about to catch him, he found himself hanging on the particular ropes above the big pit wherein the terrible dark snake was residing. So he somehow rather escaped this imminent death, and he thought himself to be very lucky. But he was, what kind of situation he was in? So, of course, Mahabharata describes there were two rats, black and white, which represent day and night, eating that particular robes. And there was a beehive on the top, and the bees were constantly stinging him. But somehow or other, in spite of this, his intelligence got covered, and he thought that this is kind of a... Although, in spite of so many problems, he was still smiling because some honey was dripping from that beehive, and he was hungry. So he felt kind of relief. He felt kind of happy. So this is actually just the state of a person in complete illusory state of existence in this material world, wherein intelligence gets covered and we think that we are enjoying. And as I said, all these different types of intelligence are applied in completely materialistic situations, wherein although such a precarious position, we still think that we can enjoy and be happy in this material world just because we are getting some little drops of honey. You know, the snake is waiting for him, and that represents the death. Animals are all around just waiting. You can't escape, and that rope is going to break at any moment. Bees are stinging us. And we still, that if we use our intelligence for material and advancement, that we are going to achieve some kind of happiness. We are getting some few drops of honey. So this is the example of misused intelligence and covered consciousness by the different degrees, as we know Bhagavad Gita explains of the lust. So the real, as a conclusion, the whole point is that we have to understand what is the real intelligence and how to apply it in all these different conditions to advance spiritually. And ultimately, as is said here, that understand the potency and the having knowledge of the spirit soul, which can get us out of this material world. So anyway, it's a little bit, a few minutes of Hare Krishna. Any questions, or should I just, or it's time to, I think it's time, yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.